Welcome to the latest installment of the NCMC podcast community musician series. And today we're talking with Paul Arslanian, who is the founder of a really interesting Northampton institution, a weekly jazz program. Tell me what the name, do you have a name? It has a name, right?
It does have a name. It's called the, well, it started off as the Northampton Jazz Workshop and Jam Session when it was at the Green Street Trio 12 years ago. And now it's been shortened to the Northampton Jazz Workshop.
Northampton Jazz Workshop. Mm-hmm. And it happens every...
Well, it used to happen every Tuesday night at three different locations. Since the pandemic closed us down, we're going to be starting back again in May. At the Drake, a new...
In Amherst.
In Amherst, every two weeks, every first and third Tuesday.
Okay. Why don't we start off just with you telling me how you got started with it and your inspiration for it and...
I moved here from California in 1984, and... I had always been involved with or able to go to jam sessions as I was learning, you know, in the early 70s, late 60s, mm-hmm. all the way through until I moved here. And there was really not much going on at that time. The bass player who's since passed, Dave Shapiro,
right.
and myself said, well, we have to do something about that. Because musicians needed a place to gather and a chance to hone their craft, you know, mm-hmm. in real time. So we talked to the owner of the Green Street Cafe,
right,
Jim Desmati, into hosting us every Tuesday night.
Right. Unfortunately, another institution that has passed into the... It was a wonderful place to eat.
It lasted about a year and a half there until Smith College finally took it over and tore it down.
Right.
But we immediately moved to the Clarion Hotel, and that got torn down about 4 years after that, 3 years after that. And then we moved to... City Sports Grill at the bowling alley.
Right. Now the bowling alley is still standing, right?
The bowling alley is still standing. Yeah, okay. Knock on wood, we're finished with the cursing places, but but we won't be continuing there. They lost a lot of business, and it was just too much for them to staff as the staff that needed for a Tuesday night, because we're pretty popular, and so. Amherst, the new Drake, asked us to come over there, so we can't wait to do that. We have a good lineup already to start with. Guest artists. Yeah.
Right. And so you started out with Dave Shapiro on bass, and did you have a regular drummer? John Fisher, right from the beginning. Right. And so after Dave died, you took on...
I had been working a lot with George Kay, and who had moved recently from New York City to Vermont, and he's a wonderful player. And so George has been with us ever since. So we are now called the Green Street Trio. We got that name after we moved from the Green Street Cafe. We decided to hold on to it.
Right. Well, that's good. So tell me a little bit about the format of how the jam session works.
It works kind of like all the... I used to be in a jam session house pianist for one in San Francisco, and then in Philadelphia at the 23rd Street Cafe. We use the same format. We hire one guest artist to play with the trio. Usually they're from New York or Boston, a pretty well-known artist, somebody that musicians would like to meet and have a chance to play with. We play an hour-long concert. As a quartet or sometimes a quintet. And then after that, I open it up and invite guests to come and sit in with different configurations. And we go until, a couple hours of that. And then at the end of the night, the guest artist comes back on stage for a couple more songs. And a few of the musicians can then join in and play with the guest artists themselves.
Is the guest artist playing with the audience members that jam, or does he or she not?
Well, that's up to them. I let them take a break and eat some dinner.
Right.
So usually they come back at the end of the set, uh-huh. At the end of the night for two right. or three more songs, at which time they're playing with those people who are still there that want to jam with them. We always have that moment when they can interact directly, musically.
Right. Yeah. And do you ever get bass players and drummers or piano players that want to, you know, like...
Oh, yeah. For the jam session? Yeah. Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Usually John Fisher, because he's left-handed, is a left-hand drummer. Mm-hmm. He'll play one or two in the beginning of the jam session and then switch the drums around.
Uh-huh.
And then normally we have plenty of drummers. Huh. And so we let them do one or two, depending upon how many drummers there are.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then he'll come back right at the end of the night, switch the drums back one more time, and then and play it out.
Oh, that's interesting.
And yes, bass players are certainly welcome, and pianists.
Right.
So usually the trio gets a nice break as well. But I introduce everybody and run the jam session, so it's organized.
And how do you pick your guest artists?
We've used a lot of folks that George has played with a lot of people in New York City, so he had a lot of contacts there.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of people that I've worked with, but we just reach out. Sometimes our audience members say, "Hey, you've got to hear this saxophone player that I heard at Smalls in New York. He's really good." And I told him about the workshop, and he'd be happy to come up, you know. So word of mouth a lot of times.
Right.
Early on, we got some really good players like Gary Smullyan, baritone saxophone player, who used to live in this area.
Uh-huh.
He did one of them. And then I could use that as pull, you know, say, well, Gary Smullyan just did it, you know. And it's a Tuesday night.
Right.
And I give them a hotel room. So generally, a lot of players aren't doing anything on a Tuesday night and welcome the chance to get out of the city. So, you know, we've had people like Houston Person that George used to work with for years. Also saxophonist Don Braden he used to work with. So once we started making connections, it was pretty easy to get people, you know. They want to work. They want to play.
Has bringing in all these outside people changed your own playing?
Yes.
And how you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I should have said in the beginning, another reason why Dave Shapiro and I started this was so we could play with some great people. totally selfish reasoning there. But, well, that's the whole idea. You should always try to play with people that are better than you, that have put in more time than you, or more experience, or whatever. And so, yeah, it's been a joy, and I've learned a lot, and my playing has changed for sure.
Do you ever get players that are hard to work with, or that try and screw you up, like? I hear stories of, you know, sometimes musicians will just try and do something that they think you won't understand so that they can show you up or something like that.
That's old school. That used to happen in San Francisco a lot. I used to work with Bishop Norman Williams. He would be the leader of this, and he wouldn't do it to me necessarily. I've had it done to me a lot, but not at this workshop. I'm the boss at this workshop, by the way. But he used to, when somebody new would come up, he would call a tune like Cherokee at ridiculous speed and make them stand up and play. So yeah, like cutting sessions and you know, trial by fire things. That's kind of old school. But yeah, it still happens, but not at our thing. I pick pleasant people for the most part that just really want to be there and play for people. So, you know, once in a while we'll get somebody that doesn't know that we're a pretty good rhythm section and we can keep up with them. So they might have a little bit of an attitude like, you know, let's see if these guys...
I'm in Hicksville, let me see
if
these guys
can
come.
And then, but almost always... In fact, always, once we start playing, they realize that we're gonna back them up. We're gonna support them, and we can keep up. except for some of the very hot tempos that they call. But you know, it's generally really nice folks who just want to meet halfway and then make music for the audience. Yeah.
This is a jazz session.
Yes. Yes. So,
but jazz is a word that has almost come to be meaningless because there's so many different things, so many different styles of music that call themselves jazz. And do you lean one direction or another, or in terms of what people might expect if they came to?
Yeah, we're sort of down the middle, straight ahead. Mm-hmm. Ballads, swing, uh-huh. bebop, Latin, blues, uh-huh. straight ahead, striving for, as they say, striving for tone and swing, uh-huh. and connections. We don't get too far out uh-huh. Into the free jazz realm. We don't get into fusion jazz that much, uh-huh. Where there's a lot of rock beats or funk beats, but we uh-huh. do some. Uh-huh. And a lot of times it depends on the artist that comes in.
Sure.
We'll play their music. Uh-huh. So sometimes it's fairly challenging with dense chords and sometimes it's just bassy style swing. Uh-huh. But we're sort of down the middle. We love to just what I call swing.
Uh-huh.
You know? And like I said, it depends on the artist. They'll bring in music and we'll practice it ahead of time sometimes. Or the people jamming, we let them call the tune. Uh-huh. But the thing is, everyone has to be somewhat familiar with the style we're playing and uh-huh. for the jam session especially.
Right.
So they have a chance to say something on
right.
their own, you know.
So you do get a chance to actually rehearse with the guest artist before your show?
It's once in a totally while. Typically, we don't. Typically, uh-huh. if they have original stuff or arrangements, they might send us music ahead of time.
Right.
So we have a heads up. Once in a while, if they come early enough, we might come over to my house and play a little bit or play uh-huh. for maybe 30 minutes at the club before a sound check, uh-huh. just to run over some details, you know.
Right.
Uh-huh. Most of the time, the rehearsal is we get together at a table away from the stage a little bit and just look at the music and decide what's going to be first and if there's okay. any tricky things, you know, we look
right.
at it. It's a talk over.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So that's what I like to call an adventure, actually.
Yes,
you don't know what's coming. And
exactly. And I think the audience really appreciates they can see that it's an adventure, and uh-huh. they like to see how we all
right.
approach it, you know. And
uh-huh. yeah, that's cool.
Uh-huh.
Are there some particular nights that have been really memorable?
I remember one at the Green Street Cafe, probably almost 12 years ago now, where saxophonist Eric Lawrence called a Duke Ellington ballad uh-huh. in a sentimental mood.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't the only one that felt that way. It was a transcendent moment.
Uh-huh.
You know, for some reason, everything just clicked right. The audience was right there with us. And a lot of the audience members remember that as a transcending moment. You know?
Right.
That was one. There was a time when we were playing with Jerry Braganzi, a nice saxophonist from Boston, playing a John Coltrane tune that just took off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's lots of moments. Uh-huh. But that one in particular was the first one.
Right. Who's your big inspiration as a jazz pianist?
Quite a few folks. I think my first one was Errol Garner.
Uh-huh.
And I still, channel him uh-huh. when I'm playing sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Thelonious Monk. Uh-huh. Everybody can hear that in my playing.
Uh-huh.
And then the usual suspects, Bill Evans,
uh-huh.
Tommy Flanagan, Red Garland. I used to influence a lot by Red Garland.
Uh-huh.
yeah, my specialty is comping for people. I really like setting things up, orchestrating behind a soloist, and being part of the rhythm section.
Right.
So you know, you pick up things from all the people that you've heard, and but those are the main ones, I think.
I was saying before, you know, jazz goes in so many different directions. What do you think are the essential element of calling something a jazz performance?
Well, it swings. There's communication and interaction between the musicians. There's improvisation based on an initial idea, and the musicians have individuality and the ability to say their own story in the context of this framework,
right,
whatever it might be, or the composition, the blues form, whatever the form is.
There you go. Oh, yeah.
So swinging, interaction, communication, used to be that you could dance to it.
Right.
Not so much important anymore, but it is important to a lot of us.
That's what I love grew up, to listen to.
Who grew up listening to jazz and practicing it early on.
That's actually, that's a very good, concise statement. I like that.
That's probably not all original, but...
right, well, that's okay. That's okay. Are you doing other music things other than the Green Street Trio these days? Forget about the pandemic. I mean...
I'm not playing in that many groups. I back up singers every so often. I'm a dance accompanist.
Mm-hmm.
I've just started going back to that at UMass, playing for ballet class. Every so often, I'll do a solo gig at somewhere.
Right.
Most of my group playing, though, is with either the trio or branching out into a quintet with the same group, the same trio backing up the quintet, you know. Two horn players and a vocalist. And I also am still music directing for tap dance concerts.
For
tap dance.
Oh, tap dance.
Yeah,
concert.
In Boston. I've done that all since the 70s.
Right. Musicians, you know, travel around and see so many different things. I just thought I might get you talk about some experiences. Like, was there ever, what's the most bizarre thing you ever saw when you were on a gig?
Saw?
Or experienced while you were on a gig?
Lots of things. I've had the opportunity, fortunately, to work with, quite a few people. Well-known, and little stints here and there. Just falling into it. Like, I work with Pharoah Sanders a lot, playing harmonium in San Francisco. And that was an incredible experience. Working with Archie Shepp in Europe, or not in Europe, in Canada, and around here, you know, and dealing with Archie, dealing with the sound people, and... and accommodations in hotels, and having to check out of a hotel because he didn't like it or something, and find another one.
So he was fussy about.
You know, every so often, getting funny with the money. Clubs would try not to pay you after you've driven 100 miles to do a gig. You know, things like that.
Was there a the most prestigious thing you ever did as a musician, where you played in front of the most people, or you were...
I'm trying to remember. I mean, I did a lot of really fancy places in Europe when I was touring with a tap dance company. We got treated like kings over there. I did a gig with Gregory Hines at the... what was it called? The Orpheum Theater? Down to center of Boston once, and, you know, there's 2,000 people there or something. I was music director for the show. Gregory was dancing, and Jimmy Slide and Savion Glover, and that was pretty exciting. Working with Pharoah Sanders, you know, for a big Great American Music Hall in San Francisco, and, just incredible. Freddie Hubbard at a college concert in Northern California. It was pretty incredible. lots of things, you know.
Hi. Was there a particular show or group that you played with that was especially challenging, that really stretched you beyond what you normally can do?
Well, I mean, there was some gigs that I played early on where I was trying to play the blues, and I got sort of friendly insulted, you know, like, man, you can't play. And so that was a good jolt. This was at a some club in San Francisco area, north of San Francisco. You know, I was pretty green then. My first time, the only time I ever played with Rahsaan Roland Kirk, also in San Francisco. This is probably 1975 or 6, something like that, maybe even earlier, for his birthday party. And he called a blues in F for his, it was a jam session in honor of his birthday. So it was at somebody's house.
Right.
And I was a piano player. I don't know why they got me. They couldn't find anybody else.
Right.
And he called a blues in F, and I thought, oh boy, I know I can play in the key of F, no problem. And then after the first couple of choruses through the blues, he started going up a half step, modulating a half step every time for all 12 keys. And I was just sweating bullets. Sometimes I only play one note per chord or something. And I had to do that for maybe 4 or 5 horn players. The rest of it's a blank, but I remember that. That always stuck with me. So I practice.
Was there a particular performance that you did where you feel like you got through to people better than you ever did before? So something that where you made the most difference that you ever made in your career as a musician?
I'm not sure. There was one point I was playing a beautiful piano and maybe Hamburg, Germany, at a concert hall. They treat you so well. They used to anyway, in Germany.
I've heard that they appreciate musicians much more over there.
Yeah.
They
have gorgeous pianos, and they take you out to a nice meal. And you know. But I was playing one of my own compositions. I had just started playing it on the road. You know, the word is...
I'm sorry?
Cathartic or something like that. But it was just a moment where people really loved it, and they were just totally silent and applauded like crazy, and I felt like I was really inside the song, and that was one moment for sure. And then just a couple months ago, playing with the trio, playing one of my arrangements for a standard song, people just really liked it, you know. These are all people at a retirement home at Lathrop Community. And it just killed people, you know. I mean, fortunately, it didn't kill them, but
right.
But they were just thrilled, and you know. So that it's just little moments like that where I knew we connected with the audience, and they appreciated it for sure.
You want to talk about some of the talent you have coming in when you go back to the Drake in May, or when you go to the Drake in May, I should say.
Sure. Yeah, I only have the first 3 performances lined up because you never know what might happen these days.
Right, that's true.
I've got several people lined up, actually, for later on. But the first artist is Gary Smullyan is coming back. He was supposed to play for our 10th birthday celebration of the jazz workshop in April of 2020, and then we were going to try it again in April of 2021. Right. Neither of that worked out. So April 26th at the Drake will be the first. Be the first performance there because it's a brand new venue.
Right.
And then on May 3rd, I think Karn Allison will be singing with us. And then on May 17th, wonderful saxophonist from New York, Stacy Dillard, and that's the known lineup for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's hoping that the pandemic continues to fade away and that the jazz workshop gets to come back strong going.
It's looking good. I mean, actually, we're going to be back. I don't know if you know, but last year the trio did Summer on Strong.
Right, yeah.
The outdoor
Series.
And we did it every Wednesday night, and they've asked us to come back.
Right, that's great.
So we'll be hiring local special guests for that every Wednesday night, starting in June. So
great. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk about what you do. I think it's a really great addition to our local music scene, chance to hear, you know, high-end jazz music and also to be able to jam with other people. It's great. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for inviting me to your podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thank you. You too.
We're going to go out the same way we came in, listening to Paul play a cut called Sissy's Bounce on his CD, It's the Feeling That Counts.